You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective at CITR. Join us every 2 weeks on Tuesday for conversations about gender, race, and social justice. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Intersections. For many of us, we have a contentious relationship with our bodies. Many of our notions and ideas about how our bodies should look, act, or feel are often determined by forces outside of our own control. Today, we want to discuss these views and ideas surrounding topics of body positivity, body neutrality, anti-fatness, and diet culture. So join our collective members as they discuss the work of Aubrey Gordon, the gender binary in anti-fatness, and fat shaping on social media.
So hello, my name is Peyton.
Hi everyone, I'm Fran, and I'm delighted to join this discussion on body positivity, body neutrality. Yeah, let's do it.
Hi, I'm Cora, and I am super excited to weigh in on body neutrality and like the function of weight in life.
Hey, my name's Elle, and yeah, I'm super excited to be here and be talking about this with all y'all intelligent folks.
My name is Bella, and this has always been a topic that I've been really passionate about and interested in, so I'm very much looking forward to discussing it.
And the topic that I'm going to be discussing is inspired by this podcast that I've been listening to called Maintenance Phase. I think a few of us are familiar with it. And it's basically kind of a debunking podcast around issues of anti-fat bias and fat phobia. They do use the term anti-fat bias in preference over fat phobia in the episode. And I believe that this is because they're trying to distinguish anti-fat bias from concepts like homophobia, you know, kind of unchanging fixed identities, whereas fatness is obviously fluctuating and can change over different periods of times for a multitude of reasons. So those terms are both like pretty common, but that's just the term that they use in the podcast. And the episode that I'm talking about is an episode that they did regarding sort of the conceptions around health in relation to weight and fatness. And basically what they're going to is there's kind of a consensus in society that fatness is overall debilitating for health, universally lowers lifespans, and anybody who is in the overweight category needs to lose weight so that they can be healthy. And basically what they go into in the podcast is that it's actually way more complicated than that. And there's actually been a ton of studies done that show there's kind of this middle ground between like the normal or healthy BMI categories, where there's actually like the middle ground of overweight categories that actually have longer life expectancies than those who are in the lower categories. And this is for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons they theorize in the episode is that some of the common causes of death for people over 70 actually have to do with bone fractures, and just having some amount of like cushion on your body literally just reduces the amount of bone fractures. And yeah, mortality rates don't actually start to really rise until you get into like quite high and quite rare BMIs. And I just found that really interesting because a lot of the time when you hear people who are kind of body positive or advocating for body neutrality, one major thing that is leveraged against them is, oh, but it's bad for your health. Like, I don't want you to lose weight because I don't like fat people. I want you to lose weight because I want you to be healthy and I want you to live a long life. And I just thought this episode did such a great job at kind of debunking that idea and kind of questioning our real motivations behind wanting people to lose weight. So I just thought that I would bring that idea to the table and see what you guys have to say about it. Whether you've had like your own experiences of people making assumptions about your health, whether that's because you're overweight or appearing to be underweight or anything like that. And yeah, and just what you kind of perceive to be the relation between health and body weight.
So I just wanted to, I guess, weigh in with something that I actually learned about in high school in my biology class. So our professor was telling us that the reason that we think that the dad bod is attractive, or like we find it like hot, I guess, compared to, you know, the man that has like a six pack of abs, is that like a dad bod actually gives you an evolutionary advantage because having more fat on your body helps you to have like a better immune system. So I don't know, I just think it's really interesting, kind of like our preconceived notions of what we think is attractive, and then kind of like, given, you know, a biological or a scientific standpoint, like what is actually going to give you the advantage?
I recently read a story about someone who had been experiencing some back pain. And every time they went to the doctor for 2 years straight, they said, oh, just try losing some weight. It's just you're overweight, and so you can't like support your spine properly. It turned out when they went to another doctor that they had developed a cystic cancerous nodule on their spine growing out of a spinal disc. And it was terminal by that point. But if the doctor had checked 2 years ago, it would have been surgically removed. I think that shows a very clear relationship between doctors not believing you and then you dying of it.
Yeah, that's actually a super common issue that wasn't directly addressed in the podcast I was listening to, but I think is super relevant. If you kind of have this preconceived notion that anyone who is fat is experiencing illness because they're fat, it literally just ignores any other pre-existing or unrelated conditions. And also another thing that is interesting is that when they're doing these statistics on higher rates of or like lower lifespans for people who are fat, they're basically just when they're doing those statistics, a lot of the times they're just assuming that anyone who passes away is passing away because of things related to their weight, when in reality, there's a ton of other conditions that it could have been attributed to, or there's also a ton of conditions that cause weight gain that can lower lifespan. So it's really way more complicated than people make it out to be.
So back in my youth, I used to be a competitive speed skater for a long time, and I was pretty serious about it and spent, I think, 20 something hours a week in the gym or on the ice training for it. But every time I went to the doctor would be like, you're in like the mildly to moderately obese category. Have you thought about losing weight? And I'm like, how could I possibly lose weight if I'm spending 20 hours a week in the gym? Muscle just weighs more than fat, and it speed skating specifically puts a lot of density into your leg bones and your leg muscles, so you just weigh more and you're more bottom heavy, and people seem to put a lot of negative attribution to that. Like I had to buy chub rub shorts just because my thigh muscles were that developed, but everyone's like, oh man, you got really thick thighs, like, ooh. No, you're just kind of putting a whole sort of expectation on my body here that isn't there.
Yeah, I can add on that. I also swam competitively for many, many years of my life. So I definitely experienced like those really big thigh muscles and leg muscles, and it kind of distorts your image of yourself and your mind, because it's like all you can see, or kind of what I thought, but you need to remind yourself that it is muscle. And similar to what you said about BMI, I really think that it kind of affects the way that we view our weight and kind of reinforces the idea that weight is just a number. And I always think of like fitness influencers, maybe like on social media, like on Instagram, how they will post a picture of them at their weight before they started going to the gym or working out, et cetera, and then a picture of them with their weight after. And obviously, more often than not, they weigh way more after they started working out, simply because muscle weighs more than fat. And even though it makes their BMI higher, I don't know, I just think it's really interesting that we put so much emphasis on such an insignificant number as BMI, especially in like the athletics community.
And your stories like sound like, it's so sad, isn't it, to think that you're like accomplished in your fields and you're like achieving all of these amazing things, and yet it's just the visual body image that's being perceived and judged and commented upon. And I think this is like a really nice point to bring in that idea of body neutrality and like seeing your body as being like something that functions for you and achieves things for you and helps you to achieve your goals and aims and everything like that, as opposed to being for the, you know, commentary from other people or anything to other people. It should just be for you.
Yeah, I'm really glad that other people out there have experienced this. And like the reality of being an athlete and having your body able to do something you need and want it to do, and the people getting very judgmental about that. The other thing is, it's an ice sport, and if you don't have some layer of fat, you will get hypothermia. That's just like, if you need that fat to not be cold. You're wearing a skin tight suit and a helmet, and that's it. You're gonna freeze. So like, fat, it's useful. You should have it. You can't just like plan around being not cold for some reason.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And it just kind of goes to show like the whole like kind of point that I'm getting at here is, I think that we need to start reevaluating the way that we perceive fatness in relation to health, just because I think that anytime that we try to make a black and white rule as to what is good and what is bad, it just oversimplifies things to the point of having harmful effects. If we say that fat is always bad, we're negating all the times when we actually need it for the benefit of our health. And yeah, that's kind of all I have to say in regards to this topic. We just want to move on to the next point.
A Tribe Called Red is the Hallucination, with their new record, One More Saturday Night, featuring Javier Mighty, Tanya Tagak, and more, out now.
Hey, what's wrong?
I want to go to therapy, but I can't afford it.
Well, did you know there's a show on CITR where you can get free therapy every other week?
Really? What's it called?
It's called Therapy Hour, and it airs every other Tuesday at 6 p.m.
You mean I can get free therapy every 2 weeks just by listening to the radio?
That's right. And it doesn't even cost you a dime.
Wow, I won't have to cry anymore.
Actually, crying is pretty good for you. I learned that by listening to Therapy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM, because everyone needs therapy.
But not everyone can afford it.
Okay, so I was really interested in a book by Aubrey Gordon, What We Don't Talk About When We Talk About Fat. And so I want to bring to the table kind of an extension of Peyton's kind of introductory discussion around fat phobia, or perhaps we should call anti-fat bias, as she kind of mentioned. This book is incredible. Like, I haven't finished it or anything, but I would completely recommend everyone going away and reading it. Like, it just brings to life so many different concepts and restrictions that I wasn't aware of at all, or maybe was aware of in a different way. And so even like the terminology around obese and overweight, so Gordon kind of suggests that like this is, you know, obviously we hear this in everyday life as terms referring to fatness, and yet it basically suggests that there's a kind of medical normal, and then anything that's away from, you know, like the normal, in my quotation marks, as you can see on this podcast, is, you know, needs to be corrected, it needs to be refined, reduced, put into that kind of typical category. And I know Peyton was talking about the idea of BMI and what it means to be healthy. And, you know, in this book, Aubrey kind of goes into like how the concept of BMI itself was developed in like the 19th century. Like, how relevant is that to today's, you know, anatomy of your contemporary person? Like, it was very specific to like a Belgium, really specific to a Belgium average in the 19th century. Like, how insane is that, that we're now using that as a kind of medical model throughout the Western world and beyond, as, you know, something to categorize whether someone is officially healthy or unhealthy, whether you're underweight or overweight. So that really struck me. And she has this amazing quote, which really stayed with me. Like, she's hoping that we can build a world that doesn't assume fat people are failed thin people. And this just really chimes with that ideal that we all know about, like the ideal of the thin, healthy person. And there's no kind of conceivable way that a fat person could be healthy. And Peyton's already kind of talked about that. It's like, actually, you know, you can be healthy and fat and et cetera, et cetera. And then like the argument's kind of taken further in terms of not seeing, you know, if you're a fat person, having that as like an insecurity or something that's internal. Like, she kind of takes it out to reveal the kind of structural, what she calls the inescapable external reality, where there are so many systems, physical, like attitudes that are anti-fat. There's just no acceptance or acknowledgement or like room for fatness. Like, just thinking about like spaces, or like she uses this really vivid description of like airplane seats and that kind of thing. So like, as that kind of visual of like, the whole world is not built around allowing any variation of body size. And then what I wanted to bring to the group was like thinking about these anti-fat sentiments that are, you know, like totally woven into all aspects of life, you know, whether you're in the medical room or like on an airplane or in a million other places, like when you're shopping for clothes, whatever. Like, how can we separate or distinguish the idea of this kind of forced dieting culture? Like, everyone wants you to be thin, everyone wants you to be thinner. How can we understand that as separate from like this whole wellness idea? Like, where does the kind of dieting push end and the kind of healthiness, wellness begin? Like, because it feels to me like that's quite a gray, blurry area. And I think that's one of the criticisms of things like body positive positivity is, you know, you want to be well, you want to be healthy, but actually, like, isn't that just another word for dieting? And that's something that's put forward in this book. She uses the example of Weight Watchers. So, you know, Weight Watchers has been going on for years and years and years, decades, and dieting kind of, as a word, went out of favor. And now apparently they've replaced, like, literally search and replaced all of the words that mention dieting, and instead they have wellness. And so it's this complete rebrand of something that's now not popular. And so that's just my kind of question query to the group is, what do you think about that? Like, how can we protect ourselves from it, but also like support body positivity, knowing that it has like a good intention? Big questions.
Sure. So what I was thinking, especially about your last point with Weight Watchers, I think that's really interesting, but it really shows how much of a marketing scheme this is and not how it's genuinely aiming to make people overall have a better connection to themselves and what that means to their weight. So I don't know, I just thought that was one thing that was really interesting. But I was also kind of thinking about how in her work, it kind of sounds like we need to lean further away from reframing fat to become people that are skinny, and rather to increase our inclusivity kind of surrounding these topics, because obviously like we have diversity in our skin color, in our gender, in our, you know, everything, including our body size. And I think that we need to kind of refocus more and less on kind of like forcing people to be healthy and diet culture, and rather like being more inclusive. And especially what you were saying, how we're basing BMI off of the average European white person from like a long time ago. I don't know. I just think that's really interesting. And it shows how we really are lacking diversity in the medical field and in fields like this.
The thing that I've always been a big proponent of for like a decade and a half now is the importance of a body being able to do what you need it to do. And that is the end definition of health. Like if you need your body to be able to do something and you can't do it, that's what we should be giving people support for. Like health and wellness shouldn't be like, oh, I eat these many vegetables and oh, I have this much nutrition, blah, blah, blah. It should be, oh, I need to be able to carry my child, or oh, I need to be able to walk up 6 flight stairs. Well, maybe you can't walk up 6 flights of stairs. So we get an elevator, or we give you something that can go up the stairs with you, instead of being like, get on that treadmill, start doing deadlifts. There's a more solutions focused direction, I think, that could be, I hate to use the phrase, healthier for folks to like be able to live the lives that they want to and need to live.
Yeah, I feel like it, like that healthy word is so, like it has so many different meanings, right? And it's kind of been commandeered depending on the marketing strategy, like you said, Bella, like depending on what you're trying to sell, like what does healthy mean? We need a new word for that kind of achievement of your body's function and yeah, goals.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because it's like when the language changes, how do we, and like, how does it affect us, right? But yeah, it, I feel like it asks us to, like when the language switches, like it does, it asks us to like further inquire with ourselves and be like, how do these guides towards wellness like make us feel, right? Like in our bodies, do they make us feel like a work in progress, that like we're never quite there? Or is it like a feeling that we are being brought closer to our physical selves and like natural flows of our bodies? We really have to question things though, right? Because like we may not hear those like fat phobic and like body negative terms anymore, but the incentives can still be there when there's money being made.
They're still there.
Yes.
I wanted to touch again on the commodification of health and how like a lot of it is very obviously like, I wouldn't say a market multi-level marketing scheme, but like something that people are definitely taking advantage of other people over. Like they get caught up maybe in their own insecurities. And then they use that on other people to give them insecurities to make money off of that. And then it just cascades into, I mean, capitalism, of course, but health shouldn't cost money. So I wanted to bring in today the idea of not fitting the binary, but the other way around. So for example, trans feminine people who are like have masculine traits or masculine bodies and want it to be that way, or non-binary people who don't express androgynously or whatever that might mean. This is something that I definitely experience a lot of as like a large butch trans woman going into spaces. They're like, oh, don't worry, you'll get to present feminine soon, or your hormones will kick in and you'll look more like a girl. I look like a girl already, thank you, but how I look as a girl is something that I get to define, and that's as a butch lesbian. And there is a lot of fat phobia wrapped up in that, like fat women, as discussed in one of the readings that we put out today, are definitely held to a higher standard of femininity. Like you already have to be this feminine to be considered a cute fat woman. And then trans women are also have that, oh, you have to look this feminine to be an acceptable woman. And it just compounds, and it's awful. It's an awful experience. And I guess I want to turn it up to the floor to see how other people have experienced like body shaming or a conflict in your presentation and your gender or something along those lines.
My comment doesn't necessarily relate to gender, but something that I thought was interesting in what you said was about like binaries. And I think that's a really interesting topic, how we're always trying as a society to box people into boxes, so to speak, or binaries. And I think that it comes with sort of man versus woman, but I also think about how it's like fat versus skinny and how we are not allowing people to be in the middle or to not conform to those binaries at all. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a really interesting connection. And I do think it very much so all stems from the same sort of societal like incompetence around this and around like a lack of inclusivity.
I love that phrase, societal incompetence. That's a good burn on society.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the idea of societal incompetence. They're just like not able to keep up with my progressive body. Feels good. I like that. It makes me feel good about my body. So thank you.
Was the question, how does like body shaming relate to gender expression?
Yeah, that's basically what I'm getting around at. And like also your own personal experiences of like having something about your presentation that doesn't necessarily line up normally with what you're expected to act like. So like tomboys, that's a more normalized-ish, it's a whole thing, a more normalized gender inconsistency. I hope everyone can hear the quotations in my voice there. But yeah, just anything along those lines.
Yeah, I think like with the whole push to be defined, right, in a certain category, that we feel from society, whatever that like really means. We also feel that like within ourselves, because it's things that like live in us, right? Like I feel like I reached a certain age where I started to perceive myself like I was never doing before. And I was watching myself and trying to figure out what other people thought of me and like what boxes people were putting me in their heads. And I was trying to control that because it was stressful. And yeah, just this push to be like constantly defined, right? And I've talked to some guys in my life about this, and it's really seems like something that's more prominent in women, that is like at a younger age, feel like they start to perceive themselves and are just so obsessed with the image that they're putting out. So it's intense.
I'd like to add to Elle's point. I think that some of that kind of stems from, like, I think of pretty privilege is the word that comes to my mind, but I think it just kind of is the privileges that come from conforming to how society wants you to conform. And I think that definitely people who are appear to, like, the public eye as how the public eye's conception of them, like, if that matches up, that's a little hard to understand, but basically if they equal, like, if they look feminine and you're like, oh, well, that's a girl, you know, like, if that's what you're thinking as a member of society, then I feel like there is a certain level of privilege attached to that. Whereas people who don't fit within those binaries, I think that there's a certain sort of kind of prejudice against that, or that it's not comfortable for them to digest, like, the way that somebody looks is not what they're expecting. I just think that's, I mean, obviously, I think that's really terrible. And I just think it's interesting kind of how, as a society, everyone has a preconceived notion. And then as soon as someone comes up that doesn't fit their, you know, idea of what a man should look like or what a woman should look like, they get very defensive or very angry about it.
Yeah, this definitely lines up with my experiences, because before I was this enormous, giant trans woman, I was a minuscule, tiny little femmy boy. And that didn't make me very many friends either. And I definitely, like, was very aware after a certain point, like, I think grade one or two, I started to be really aware of people, like, watching me exist in a way that they didn't like, and watching that, like, judgment hang over my head. And it changed how I acted. I mean, mostly I just wore bigger jackets and didn't hang around people as much, but I did start to try to act in ways that wouldn't get me in as much trouble and kind of mask it up. And it's ironic now that I am grown and am large. I'm like, no, but what if I took some of that masculinity back? And that's still bad. No, there's no winning here. There's no winning.
I'm Randy, and Cora brought up a part of their kind of discussion that I really just wanted to hint at, that I talked about earlier, and, like, talking about, like, where it's, like, complicated between, like, presenting how you want to present and then what your body will allow. I think androgyny comes in this conversation so much, as someone who, like, very recently started presenting more mask, specifically as, like, a mask lesbian. It's such, like, an interesting, like, awareness, because it's so common for, like, mask lesbians to present in a very specific way, like oversized shirt, short hair, and those things are so, like, outside of the boundaries of, like, what fat people are taught how they can look. Also, just, like, buying oversized clothing, like, it's not something that's, like, easily achievable as a fat person. And so I think, like, that to me is, like, a really big one, that when we say, like, oh, like, I just dress androgynous, like, it's very much, like, to me, androgyny is a synonym for being thin. Like, they're very, very connected in my mind. So I just had to add that because Cora brought it up and it reminded me of it.
Okay, yeah, something that you mentioned that kind of brought up this idea in my head, connecting it to anti-fat bias and kind of the overall conversation that we're having today, obviously. It makes me think about something that I researched called, like, I guess a phenomenon of, like, mid-sized people, which are not people that fit into plus size, nor people that fit into the societal super skinny idealized beautiful Instagram model, obviously, that you see on social media. And something that I was interested in is, though we see a rise in representation of mid-sized people, especially in the most recent years, like the past couple of years, I think that it still shows that we have a really long way to go as a society, because I think that people are actively trying to expand their ideas away from extremely thin, you know, those Instagram model looking people, but their idea of that is simply mid-sized people, not plus-sized people, just because they kind of, like, can't wrap their head around that. And it makes me feel that way about people who, like, don't conform to either female or male, how we have, like, a set idea of what that should look like in our head, when reality, like, is that it's a spectrum, and that's kind of, like, the whole point.
Yeah, I actually want to go and shout out my short and incredibly muscular wife who has to trim and hem all of their clothes. And they dress very masculine. So being quite short means they have to buy bigger shirts and then cut them in, or buy bigger pants and then hem them up, because they just don't have a standard body. And it gets in the way of how they want to present all the time. And I also want to shout out to all my non-binary, binary trans folk, and non-androgynous, non-binary folk who live in this like border realm where you have to make decisions on like buying clothes that don't fit and making them fit, or dressing ways that don't really like fit with who you are. Y'all stay strong out there. Love you.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial, open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Now the patriarchy is dead, and we killed it. If you identify as a woman, femme, trans, or non-binary, CITR wants you on the air. You can talk about literally whatever you want as long as you care about it. No worries if you have no experience, we'll train you in everything you need to know. Come by CITR and say hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello.
From 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday to help us never play Led Zeppelin on CITR 101.9 FM ever again.
Yeah, thank you so much for all the thoughts so far. When I think about this kind of stuff, I think it's really easy for us to be so hard on ourselves and be frustrated with ourselves for our relationship with our own bodies. And it's really easy to forget that a lot of the time, this kind of stuff is predetermined before we even get the chance to start to question it. Whether it's historically or by others or by the internet, just by our society's culture that is built, right? And so in my own, I guess, journeys towards becoming more embodied and like learning about the healing that comes with that, I started reading this book called The Caliban and the Witch by Silvia Federici. And she talks about the witch trials that happened in Europe, and how the witch trials and the demonization of the body was in tandem with the uprising of capitalism. And so there's a bunch of quotes in there from different like white philosopher dudes, but that talk about overcoming the body, reforming the body, disciplining the body, right? Like just this horrible stuff that pushes for the idea that, quote, the body has to die so that labor power can live. And, you know, with witches, it was this sense of women being in tune with the natural flows of the earth, which is magic, right? And she says in her book that the world had to be disenchanted before it could be dominated, right? The body had to be disenchanted before it could be dominated. And so we have all these like Cartesian ideals that come in about like division between like body and mind, and that We have to prevent the wisdom of the flesh from corrupting the powers of the mind. And like, it's just this huge divide constantly. And it's so crazy to me to be reading these kind of things and be like, wow, these are foundational to how we live now, right? These are the kind of things that, like, whether or not we were directly taught it and told them, are built into the walls and the way we move and our own bodies in the world today. So in a way, it's frustrating, but it's also really liberating to read about, because it reminds me of like the stories that are held, a bit of relief that I don't get frustrated at myself for having a not neutral relationship with my own body, right? Because look at everything that has happened with the body in history. So yeah, I just wanted to hear like what kind of impression this kind of historical knowledge and facts, quotes, whatever has on you all, because it had effects on me. So please.
So back in, I think it was 2019 or 2018, I took a whole class on this, actually. It was called The Medicalization of Sex. And we talked a lot about how, like, medicine and healthcare, like, especially like midwifery and doulas and that sort of feminine care that was done, was steadily disenfranchised and
discredited.
Thank you very much. Yes, discredited in the public sphere. And then, like, you can go back and see advertisements that are like, oh, don't go to your neighborhood witch, she'll just sell you something that'll give you warts. Like, it's really buck wild weird stuff. And they were like recentering health as men's work, which was something that was done in ancient Greece, which they were pulling directly from, despite the ancient Greeks being just awful at medicine. Just whole day's worth of talk there. But they basically entirely removed women and non-binary folk from the equation. They said no more non-binary folk. Cartesian dualism, as you brought it up, is the only way to exist. So there's a gender binary now, and also there's logic and the righteous mind, and then there's the sinful body, which we need to push away. And obviously all that women's work is sinful body, goodbye. That was what the class was about. And I, as soon as you brought this up, I was like, yes, let's get into it. Let's get into how witches used to be the healthcare professional for the longest time, and us non-binary people who did it too.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like, I love some of the suggestions and ideas that came up from even those like small points, and I really want to read that book too now you've piqued my interest. I just wanted to touch very briefly on the idea of like the separation of the mind and the body, and thank you for pointing that out and revealing that we still believe in that today. It's still everywhere. And it just resonated with this whole idea of controlling your own body and fatness and everything else, the way that the burden and ownership is on you as an individual. And it completely ignores, you know, any other factors or environmental or, you know, societal, whatever. Like, it just reminded me of that shame and burden and everything else that's, yes, put on the individual. Like, it's your issue, it's your problem, you need to fix it.
I also was very astounded, I guess, by the fact that we need to dominate or conquer the body. I just, in my head, that just doesn't really make a lot of sense, as the body is something that we're given. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, this is the only body you have, treat it well. Like, I don't really understand why we need to conquer it or kind of like make it conform to how we want. And similarly, it's not really related to anti-fat bias, but it makes me think of the abortion laws that are getting passed in the United States right now, and about like imposing restrictions on other people's bodies. And it's just the unfortunate irony, I guess, is that it's a bunch of older white men trying to make decisions about what is unfortunately most usually young women's bodies, who, you know, should be allowed, obviously, in my opinion, to have the choice of what they want to do. But I don't know, I just think it's really interesting. And that reminds me of kind of what you were saying about how we need to conquer the body, or we need to set rules about the body of what it can and cannot do, when really it's just there for us to be, I guess, on this earth.
Yeah, I was really incensed because it made me remember mind over matter. Like, if you choose to be, you can not be fat. Like, it's just a, if you had enough mental willpower, you would be in complete control of your body. It would look exactly like how I want it to look for you. And that definitely stemmed around the time of the witch trials, where like people were like being told these things, like that. That's where they started to stem into like broader societies. Oh, you need to be consciously in control. You need to be righteous with the Lord, and you need to be pure of body, and therefore you can't look anything like this.
Yeah, it's terrible stuff, right? This like mind over matter domination thing. And it's interesting because like we think of it as very, I'm glad you brought that up, Fran, that it's like it is so still alive today in us, of like just overcoming our own like desires for rest even. And we think rest is something we have to earn. And the push to like go to work and like do all this stuff, even if you're on your period or whatever it is, right? And it's just sad. It's really sad because these like these folk cults and what's his name, Descartes, Francis Bacon, who are like the foundational thinkers, right, of like science and philosophy, it's like they obviously had their own body issues that they were like projecting onto some peeps, and it caused so much damage and caused so much harm, right? Body neutrality was not really like a word back then, but it really shows like the power that you can have when you do start trying to take control over other people's bodies, right? And I think it's something that, yeah, we have to like, we have to check within ourselves. How are we relating to our bodies? Well, accounting that we are a part of this bigger web of stories and of things that have happened. And you think about when you're a kid and you're just like, you don't even think about your body. You're like, I am my body. It's not like, I'm not separate from my body. I don't think about, I don't love my body. I don't hate my body. I just am. And then we start to learn, right? We start to learn different things along the way.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting kind of how we are forced by our environment around us or the people around us to conform to a certain way, which happens to be an excellent lead-in to my topic of discussion, which is how we portray fat shaming or anti-fat bias in media. And I'm specifically kind of talking about social media. So that would be like TikTok, Instagram, and Pinterest even, which may not seem like it, but it can actually be pretty damaging, I guess, to body imaging. So kind of the main topic that I wanted to talk about is how the algorithm on these apps, like on these social medias, is promoting skinny and beautiful people, like Instagram influencers or models like Gigi Hadid, like et cetera, et cetera. And I was reading a really interesting article where they interviewed a 19-year-old, which is my age, so I can really relate to it. And she was saying that she scrolls through TikTok and Instagram, and she's aware that the body types that she's seeing are unrealistic, and that she's obviously not going to attain them, and that it's just kind of how media is, but it still makes her feel like that's how she should be looking. So it's like, even though we know that that's not kind of like the ideal or it's not realistic, it still makes us feel and like internalize those insecurities that we have. And then another interesting point that I saw was that how Instagram influencers, I guess, are trying to be more relatable to the youth or the Gen Z culture by kind of contorting their bodies into these positions where it appears as though they have like fat rolls, or, you know, like, so they look more like you, you can relate to them more, and, you know, they can profit off of you more, essentially. And sites like this tend to promote disordered eating and also like disordered exercising. I think that you find that a lot in the social media fitness kind of community. But then I was thinking, even though we know that obviously I'm never going to look like Bella Hadid or, you know, all these Instagram models, like, why does it still bother me? Like, why does it get to me so much? But I think it's just goes to show how society has almost conditioned us to think that this is not okay. Like, it's not okay to be comfortable with the way that you look. And if you do, you need to go back on Instagram and scroll until you feel uncomfortable again, just because that's kind of the nature of social media. And we face in our lives a lot of prejudice towards people that are not super, super skinny, kind of similar to what Peyton and Cora discussed at the very beginning of the episode with like medicine, and how if you're overweight, the doctor won't refer you or won't diagnose you until you've lost some weight, because that's often like you're kind of brushed off until you can lose weight. And then they're like, oh, then we'll diagnose you. And two examples of this that I thought were really interesting are two examples of kind of like this in media. First, I wanted to talk about an old Vogue cover. It's a diversity issue. And they put Ashley Graham, who's a pretty well-known model, on the cover with, I think, like six other super, super skinny, you know, like very typical model body, like women on the cover. And that was the cover of their diversity issue. And similarly, Glamour magazine put Amy Schumer, who is not a plus size woman, who does not wear plus size clothing, on the front of their plus size issue without her consent, which naturally, as I'm sure you can infer, can cause a lot of issues and a lot of backlash, just because we're trying to put her into the box because, oh, she's not skinny, so she must be plus size. Let's stick her on the cover of the issue. She's pretty relevant, you know, at this time. And something else that I guess, like, if you want to learn more about advertising and how anti-fat bias is portrayed in that, I read about a really interesting series of documentaries called Killing Us Softly. And it basically highlights specifically Photoshop and how women are portrayed in media in order to make them look super, super skinny and super beautiful. And it is a little bit outdated. I think it's from like the early 2000s, like the early 2010s, but I definitely think that it is still, like, it still has important connections today. So the first question that I wanted to get you guys' input on kind of relates to our ages. So I was thinking, obviously, I'm pretty young. I'm a Gen Z. And my whole life, I've been surrounded by internet culture. Like, I honestly don't remember a time when I wasn't on the internet. Which may be shocking for some people, but to me, that's just how it was. So I just wanted to hear from you guys kind of like what it was like growing up in a world without social media and then all of a sudden being exposed to everything at the dawn or like the birth of Instagram, like all at once. I don't know. I just kind of wanted to hear what you guys had to say about that.
I think the short answer is probably that it's always been there, but in different forms. So thinking about TV, thinking about media, this is just a continuation of everything that came before in terms of the photoshopping and those ideals, and probably back to the 19th century and earlier, like that kind of continued reduction of variety and diversity into you know, the body, the idealized body as we know it now. And yes, of course, that's changed over the over time and over different geographic locations, I would imagine. But it feels like now we're in a globalized culture. It's a very Western, white, skinny ideal that we're all aiming for. And I quite like the idea of you like feeling like you had to go back onto Instagram to like realign your values and be like, oh no, I don't feel uncomfortable. I know, I must get back onto the gram. but yeah, that sounds like a very circular bit of a horrible nightmare. But yeah, it was there all along, I think. It's just now more pervasive in different formats.
Yeah, I'm 29. So I was born into the internet era, but I was also in the like early stages of internet where you saw a lot of websites that were brown with yellow text on the front. And not so many photos, because it would take, like, no joke, several minutes just to load a single, like, low-res photo you can't tell someone's facial features on. And it would make a hell of a racket, because dial-up. But definitely I was exposed to a lot of the like Instagram model equivalent on TV, or like specifically in commercials or driving down the highway. They were plastered all over billboards, so many of them. And when that started to infiltrate the internet that I was exposed to, because I was on it a lot, it was mostly through like banner advertisements for pornography sites, which is not something you should really be exposed to at like 5 or 6 years old, but here you go. And it really like branded a lot of negativity into me, into these ideas of like the advertised body, like what's for sale right now, what are people buying. Because I was exposed to some inappropriate stuff when I was quite small, and as Facebook came to be when I was in high school, I got exposed to it to a lot more, and I looked at myself, my weird speed skater body, and I said, wow, there's no way I could look like any of these girls. There's just not a chance. I guess I'll just have to give up, and give up on my appearance. I did for a number of years until I figured out being trans, and then that's a whole other mess. But it was this constant like reminder that I will never look like what I'm supposed to be, look like what's being sold to me, what I'm supposed to be buying. And now I just don't go on social media, because I know that I can get stuck back in that loop of being like, oh yeah, reminder, you don't look right.
Yeah, I totally think it's like a very, very vicious cycle. It's kind of like just when you think that you're confident in how you look, you go back on Instagram and you see your friend's post, or, you know, you see someone's post on Instagram and you're like, wow, like, that's what she looks like in a bikini. I don't look like that in a bikini, you know, and it's just really harmful. Just as soon as you feel like you're getting over it, like you get thrown right back into it. But yeah, really interesting to hear you guys' thoughts. I don't know why I forgot that, I guess, TV and like magazines and billboards still existed when I wasn't, I guess, like young. So that's a little bit embarrassing. I think it just goes to show how much of a true Gen Z person that I am.
This episode of Intersections was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program. Thank you for listening to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective. Tune in again in 2 weeks to catch our next episode. We can always be reached at our email, genderempowerment@citr.ca, for comments, feedback, and topic ideas.